fictional soldiers. Whichever it was, Mike was sure that it was part of a plan by Mengsk. Mike was almost to the wardroom when the door exploded, and two men in combat armor tumbled out. It was Rayner and Duke, locked in each other's arms. The former lawman had already ripped off the shoulder plate of the general's suit and spiderwebbed the man's visor with a steel-shod fist. Duke was no slouch, however, and there were several new dents in Rayner's already rumpled chest plate. "Jim!" shouted Mike. Despite himself, Rayner turned toward the reporter. General Duke did not miss the opportunity, slamming both fists into the side of Rayner's helmet. The former marshal staggered back a step, but did not fall. Now free of his opponent's neo-steel embrace, Duke went for his sidearm, a nasty needle gun that could penetrate bulkheads. Rayner recovered as the general brought the weapon up and grabbed the older man by the wrist. Then, the servos in both sets of armor squealing, Rayner slammed Duke's arm against the bulkhead. Once, twice, on the third time something cracked in Duke's gauntlet, and the general screamed. He dropped the gun and sank to the deck. The needler went skittering across the floor. Mike knelt down, grabbed it, and rose, clamping it to his own belt for safekeeping. Only then did Mike become aware that they were not alone in the hallway. Ahead and behind them were armed Marines, their weapons leveled on Rayner and himself.
"Y'all just signed your own death warrant, boy," Duke snarled.
There was blood at the corner of his mouth, and he cradled his pistol hand. More than metal had been shattered by Rayner's blows. "You just signed the death warrant of your home planet, General," Mike snapped. To the Marines, he said, "He just set off the emitters. He called the Zerg here, damn it. He and Menx didn't even give the Confederates a chance to surrender. The Zerg are coming here, and this bastard is the one who rolled out the welcome mat." Some of the Marines lowered their weapons. They seemed suddenly to be having second thoughts about the revolution, or were suddenly worried that the Zerg were going to show up on their doorstep. Others kept a flinty-eyed, neutral glare, and their weapons remained aimed at Rayner's chest. Mike figured the ones who were hesitating were the ones who weren't neurally resocialized. The others were waiting for the kill order.
"I have you court-martialed," said the general.
Mike let out a thin breath. Duke was threatening, not ordering, Rayner's death. He was concerned that Mengsk might not approve.
"You want my rank, you can have it," Rayner said hotly. "And I'm not in your chain of command. I answer to Mengsk, same as you. You can't do squat without Mengsk's say-so."
"And whose orders do you think I was following when I activated the emitters, boy?"
said Duke, smiling despite his pain.
"You set off a dozen emitters on Tarsonis," said Rayner. "The populace will be swarmed."
"We set them off in strong Confederate locations," said Duke, "and evacuated most of our regular troops. Hell, boy, didn't you realize we were planning one more when we picked you up?"
Mike suddenly thought of the Ghost and the tech crew and the way Kerrigan had reacted. Of course Mengsk wouldn't care about information. He was after control of the entire realm of human space. Rayner spat.
"You son of a—"
He took two steps toward the general. General Duke, in his armored battle suit, held up his good arm. Not to attack, but to ward off a blow. The general was afraid, an old man quailing in a neo-steel shell. Rayner paused for a moment, then spat again. He wheeled and headed for the lift to the observation dome. None of the Marines in the hall stopped him. Some didn't have the guts to open fire on one of their own. Some didn't have the orders. And some didn't know which man was the true criminal. Mike followed Rayner. Behind them, General Duke bellowed for the soldiers to get back to their stations. Mike laid a hand on Rayner's shoulder, and the big man turned. For a moment, Mike was afraid that Rayner was going to take a swing at him, but the fire in the man's eyes was replaced with deep, bitter sadness.
They didn't even give him a chance, he said. They could have used it as a threat, but they just set them off. No warning, nothing. While we were en route back to the ship, they set them off.
So what are you going to do? Mike asked.
I'm going to have it out with Manx himself, said Raynor. He's got to be made to see reason.
You're not going up there. Right now, Duke is probably on the blower with him, calling for your hide. You've got about 10 minutes before he convinces some of his followers to arrest you, with or without Manx's permission.
Yeah, Raynor said bitterly. And the way I feel right now, I'd probably take a shot at Manx as well.
Well, there's that. And Manx will have you killed if you do that.
So, your prescription is Dr. Liberty? Said Raynor.
Go find some allies. The rest of your unit from Planetside. Any of the old colonial militia from the Sara system, if any of them are left on board. Go there and stay there until I call for you. And here. He passed the pack to him. Hold on to these. There's juicy gossip on those discs.
Where are you going?
Raynor asked. I'm going up to the observation deck. I need to talk to the great man himself. I'll try not to hit him. Raynor nodded and stomped off, the bag of secrets looking small and insignificant in his heavy hand. Mike took a deep breath, closed his eyes, and repeated the mantra. I am not going to hit him, he said softly. I am not going to hit him. The doors to the lift opened, and Kerrigan stalked out. Her face was a roiling storm cloud of anger and doubt. Mike jumped back as if she had been General Duke swinging an armored fist.
Lieutenant, he said.
Sarah, what's wrong?
I spoke with Arcturus, said Kerrigan, and for the first time that Mike could remember, she stammered, unsure of how to phrase her next words.
He explained himself. And his explanation was full of examples and buzzwords and quotes and omelets and breaking eggs and freedom and duty and everything else. And he had me believing, Mike. I really wanted to believe that he had information we didn't, like there were Zerg queens in the heart of Tarsonis itself, calling the shots through puppet rulers, sacrificing the populace and eating babies in the streets.
She took a deep breath, but as I listened, I watched the map of Tarsonis on the planet behind him.
Mike said, I know the screen, it's his favorite toy.
Kerrigan gave a derisive snort.
As I watched, that screen turned red, all of it red from the Zerg arriving.
She looked at Mike, looking for confirmation in his eyes.
There were no Zerg on Tarsonis until he set off the psi emitters, she said in a small voice. None at all. It wasn't like the Sara planets, or even Antigua Prime, where there were some already there, and we had already lost the world. There was nothing there to threaten us but other humans.
She took a deep breath and closed her eyes.
And now the Zerg are coming from everywhere. They're on the planet. Arcturus didn't even recall any of the units currently in combat. He didn't even bother to get the teams that placed the psi emitters off-planet. He left them there. Sacrifices must be made, he said, and he said that in that calm, pleased voice, as if he were ordering coffee.
Mike thought of the team that landed at Atkins Square, and hoped that Kerrigan was too upset to pick up his suppositions. Instead, he said, All right. He told you this. And then what happened?
And then word came up from the bridge about a fight between Jim and Duke.
Kerrigan's face was a storm cloud again,
and he dismissed me. Just told me I had to go, just like that, and I lost my temper with him.
There's been a lot of that going around, and for good reason.
Mike, there was no rationale for him to do this. I thought it was a bluff, or that Tarsonis was already infected, or that there was a master plan. It was just that Arcturus was a hammer, and when you have a hammer, every problem seems to be a nail.
Mike remembered Mengsk making the same quote earlier. It seemed like half a lifetime ago. It's okay, Mike said, reaching up to hold her by the shoulders. She did not turn away.
And Mike?
Her voice was a whisper.
When I got mad at him, I looked. I mean, I really looked into him.
Michael waited for her to continue, but she just shook her head. When she spoke, it was in a low hiss. She spat.
That bastard,
Mike said. Look, I sent Jim down to his quarters and told him to keep his friends around him. I think you qualify. Kerrigan looked up at Mike, and for the briefest moment, she looked unsure. Then a wry smile tugged at the corners of her lips, and she said,
No, I don't think so. I'm so upset right now, Jim would just make me feel...
She let out a long breath and shook her head.
I need to be alone for a little while. I need to know that I can still rely on myself, to make sure I know that I can do what needs to be done. Despite this, I'm still a good soldier, and I have a job to finish. Maybe some good will come out of this. Okay?
Mike disagreed, but he said, It's okay.
Kerrigan grinned. Even if I weren't a telepath, I'd know you're lying. Mengsk is right about that. You want to save everyone from themselves. I want you to know that it's appreciated.
You watch out.
I can take care of myself.
Kerrigan managed a sure, wide-lipped smile.
I'm no one's martyr. Hell, some days I even believe that. Just tell Jim...
She paused and shook her head again. What? Mike asked, expecting her next words.
Nothing, she said at last. Tell him to just watch out, too, okay? For me.
And she was gone, heading down to the dropship bays. Mike watched her stride down the hall, shedding unease and unsureness, like a butterfly leaving its chrysalis behind. Mike just wished that his stomach didn't hurt so much, and he was sure that it would be a long time before he saw her in the flesh again. Mike took the lift up to the observation deck. Arcturus Mengsk was there, his hands behind his back, watching the screen of Tarsonis fill up with red triangles. They were nearly a blur on the screen itself, broken by the hot yellow marks of Confederate troops. Mike noticed that the chessboard had been thrown across the room, and the pieces were scattered about. Kerrigan had definitely lost her temper. Mengsk turned away from the map, his salt-and-pepper beard now looking more white than black.
Ah, the third of my brilliant rebels, he said. I was wondering when you were going to turn up. Actually, I expected you to be the first one to march in here with demands and insults, not the good lieutenant. You must have really gotten to her.
I didn't do anything, said Mike. But stand by her while you consigned another planet to its death.
One death is a tragedy. A million deaths is a statistic.
Do you keep a database of quotes to justify your excesses? Mike asked, his eyes narrowing. Mengsk smiled grimly.
I take it that this means you've finally given up trying to save my soul. I hope not, because after we succeed, I'll need men like you more than ever to help form the new Universal Order, to help form the needed order to repel the alien menace.
Alien menace? Mike sputtered the words. That would be the menace that you yourself brought down on this world. Is that the alien menace you mean? Mengsk tilted his head and pursed his brows, as if disappointed in Mike's response. Behind him, the screen continued to throb and glow, and now blue-white triangles were moving in from the edge of the screen. What Mengsk said was,
I didn't anticipate Sarah coming up here, and I didn't expect Raina to pick a fight with a general. That was foolish. and inconvenient. I'm going to have to smooth over some harsh feelings there.
Harsh feelings? They nearly killed each other just now.
Manx shook his head, and Mike realized that the man was minimizing the problems, just as he was minimizing the situation on Tarsonis. Minimizing them, to the point where they could be ignored, glossed over, forgotten. His own reality-warping field, thought Mike.
General Duke is, the rebel leader said, at heart a coward. I'll provide him with the spine he needs to go forward. James, on the other hand, is all courage and honor, looking for a place to explode. A loaded gun looking for targets. I've given him direction. I've given him targets. Both men are very useful at what they do, and once we've taken Tarsonis, all this will wash out. Neither men can really survive without me, and to stay viable, they'll realize they will have to follow my directives.
Are they just chess pieces to you? Mike asked.
Not chess pieces. Tools. Talented, useful tools. And yes, Rayna, Duke, the Zerg, the Protoss, yes, even you and dear Lieutenant Kerrigan are all tools to achieve a greater good, a better future. Yes, things look dark right now, and I'll admit my culpability. But think of this. If things are terrible now, think how good we'll look when we take over, eh?
Don't look now, Mike said, looking past Mengsk up at the screen. But I think some more of your tools are attacking your other tools.
Huh?
Mengsk spun in place and looked at the board. Already the first blue-white triangles, the symbols of the Protoss, were making planet fall. The red Zerg triangles were dispersing in their wake in ripples. It was as though the Protoss were stones thrown into a crimson pond.
This is bad,
Meg said softly.
Very bad. I did not expect them to arrive so quickly. This is very bad indeed.
Oh, my God. You really didn't expect this, Mike said, blinking in surprise. Then the nervousness in his stomach turned to chill fear, and he added, "Why doesn't that make me feel any better?" Chapter 16. Fog of War. Let's not kid ourselves. We got our heads handed to us by the Zerg and the Protoss. Yes, they were like nothing we had ever seen before. Yes, their biology was different. Yes, their technology, or what we would call their technology, was more advanced than ours in dozens of areas. And, of course, they were belligerent and aggressive in the extreme. They knew where we were, and they had the advantage of surprise. But, and this is a rather large but, we humans are about the most ornery cusses in the galaxy. We had been fighting among ourselves for as long as we'd been in the sector, and we had honed our own battle technologies to the point where we were their equal in many ways. We had the advantages of interior lines of supply. That's military for surrounded. And native terrain, that's military for we're fighting them in our living rooms. We could have taken them if we had gotten our act together. So what happened? The very thing that made us good warriors, the fact that we had fought among ourselves, also made us horrible at banding together in our hour of crisis. We could not unite under one banner or even form a coalition. In fact, every time there was a chance for that, one faction or another did something to enhance the advancement of their own political agenda over the other factions, often at the expense of the rest of humanity. I can't imagine the hive-minded Zerg or the glowing Protoss falling prey to such basic human drives as greed and power and raw pig-headedness. Of course, those are all basic human drives, and that's why non-humans were cleaning our clocks. The Liberty Manifesto. You really didn't know, did you? Mike asked. You didn't know the Protoss would get here. How could you not know?
Impudent pup,
said Mengsk, stalking to his console and scanning a dozen screens at once.
Of course I knew the Protoss would get here. They follow the Zerg around like housewives chasing flies with a rolled-up newspaper, looking for them to alight so they can swat them. I just didn't expect them to get here so soon.
Despite himself, Mike smiled. Anything that disturbed the great Arcturus Mengsk was enough to make him happy. And upon consideration, if the Protoss had been in contact with Mengsk, they probably saw him for the two-faced politico he was, and they were just hanging out in warp space waiting for him to do something like this. Mengsk cycled through a number of screens, then cursed under his breath. Finally, he opened a toggle and said,
Duke.
The battered face of the general appeared on the screen.
Sir, have you considered my request regarding Captain Rayner? Spare me your petty bickering.
Manx snapped.
Get the local commanders online. The Protoss are here.
Yes, sir, we know, Duke said proudly. But they're avoiding our forces, concentrating primarily on the Zerg hives.
He paused and blinked, completely unaware that this might be a bad thing.
If the Protoss forces engage the Zerg, Manx said, enunciating each word, then the Zerg are fighting them instead of the Confederates. If the Protoss engage the Zerg, the Confederates may escape. The old families may get away, and with them, the heart of Confederate power.
Duke blinked again. Then his face fell.
We need to stop the Protoss, then. I can send them a transmission telling those glowing buzzards to back off.
Mengsk ignored him and hit some other toggles.
Send Lieutenant Kerrigan with a strike force to engage the Protoss advance party. Captain Rayner and General Duke will stay behind with the command ship.
Rayner's angry face, as red as the surface of Tarsonis, popped up on another screen.
First you sell out every person on this world to the Zerg, and now you're asking us to go up against the Protoss? You are losing it. And you're going to send Kerrigan down there with no backup?
Mengsk's face had already changed from surprised agitation to calm reassurance. The reality bubble was disrupted, but not broken. Mike wondered how much more would be needed to bring down the entire facade the man projected. And what would happen once the mask dropped? Was there any center at all to the man to be revealed? Mike realized he could stay, poking and arguing, and maybe even getting an angry response out of the terrorist. Mengsk was starting to look as though he might be at the end of his tether. But he was right about one thing. Michael Liberty had given up trying to save Arcturus Mengsk's soul. And there were other, more deserving recipients of his aid. Mike started for the lift. Behind him, Mengsk was saying calmly,
I have absolute confidence in Kerrigan's ability to hold off the Protoss.
The lift doors closed as Rayner's voice said,
This is bullsh-.
And then Mike was dropping down to where, he hoped, Rayner had gathered some allies. And despite himself, he hoped that Kerrigan had changed her mind and would be there as well. There were about 24 men in Rayner's barracks. Some were already strapped into their battle armor. Others were hastily suiting up. Rayner was at the comm unit. Kerrigan was not there in body. Instead, her voice, tinny over the wrist-mounted receiver, bounced upward through the room.
But you don't owe him this, said Rayner. Hell, I've saved your butt plenty of...
Kerrigan interrupted him. Jimmy, drop the knight in shining armor routine. It suits you sometimes, just not... She paused for a moment, as if reconsidering her words. Not now, she said. She sounded tired and worn, almost defeated. I don't need to be rescued. I know what I'm doing. Once we've dealt with the Protoss, we can do something about the Zerg.
She took a deep breath. "Arcturus will come around," she said, but she sounded to Mike as though she didn't hold out much hope. "I know he will."
Raynor's lips were a thin line framed by his sandy blonde beard.
"I hope you're right, darling. Good hunting."
He closed the link and looked up at Mike. "We're going after her," said Mike, a flat statement of fact.
"You bet your ass we are. Suit up, bring your gear. We may not be welcome back here afterwards."
Mike slipped into one of the empty combat suits. "Manx screwed up in one other place," he said, his hands now flying automatically over the fittings and seals. "Once Kerrigan engages the Protoss, they're going to treat us as hostiles, all of us, and there's a lot of Protoss hardware floating around in the system right now orbiting Tarsonis." Raynor grunted agreement as he ran the check systems on his own suit. He had patched up most of the damage inflicted by Duke earlier, but Mike noticed that some of the telltales were still flashing a nasty yellow warning beneath his visor.
"So we have to dodge Protoss birds as well as Zerg," said Raynor. "It's never easy around here."
"That's why we love the challenge," Mike said, more to himself than to anyone else. He hefted the knapsack of stolen data and, on the spur of the moment, shoved his old coat, the gift from the newsroom, on top. It had been singed by laser fire and spattered with blood and less recognizable fluids and baked under foreign suns. It was tattered and ragged and bleached.
"A lot like myself," Mike thought,
shoving the coat down hard into the backpack, making everything fit. There was nothing else he wanted from the locker. He hoisted the sack, slung it across the back of his armor, and followed Raynor out. The ship had gone to red alert with the first appearance of the Protoss, and now Raynor's men moved through the crimson-lit hallways to the dropship bays. Mike could feel the G-forces through the deck plates. The big command ship was weaving through something, but he could not tell if it was debris or enemy fire. "Think we can get off the ship?" Mike asked as they stepped into the landing bay.
"Yeah," said Raynor. "The dropship pilots are good old boys. They aren't afraid of Duke's wrath, and anything else for that matter. They can always say I threatened them into bringing us down."
"They may not be afraid of my wrath, but you should be," said General Duke from the shadows to one side.
The lights flashed from red to yellow, and Mike saw Duke standing there among the dropships with two squads of Marines. They had their weapons aimed at Raynor's men. Duke was cradling his own weapon, a borrowed gauss rifle, in his offhand, his right hand hanging uselessly at his side.
"Going somewhere, boy," said Duke,
a hearty smile appearing above the ceiling rim of his helmet. There was still dried blood at the corner of his mouth. Perhaps he thought it was a badge of honor, Mike thought, or a slight to be avenged.
"We're going after Kerrigan," said Raynor. "She needs backup, regardless of what Manx says."
"That girl needs what Manx says she needs," Duke drawled. "But it's nice of you to go to the effort. Now I have solid proof of mutiny, and I can provide the traitors to go with it."
Mike scanned the Marines. They were all nearly resocialized and, worse yet, already pumped to the gills with stims. Their eyes were practically pupilless. In this state, they were effectively hardwired into Duke's nervous system. Once the general gave the command, they would automatically jump or fire or drop for 20 push-ups without thinking twice. So, the solution would be to keep the general from giving that order.
"Manx would be very disappointed if you killed us," Mike said.
Duke laughed. "I'll just throw one of his old quotes back at him. It's easier to seek forgiveness than to gain permission. Now you boys with Raynor, you drop the weapons now and surrender. I might even let you live if you do."
Raynor didn't move. Behind him, Mike could hear some of their rangers slowly laying their rifles on the deck. Then the Hyperion pitched to one side hard. Something big had slammed into its side. The Marines, in their bottom-heavy boots, rocked in position, and Duke's aim was thrown off for a moment. When he could bring his weapon back around, Raynor had his own rifle unslung and ready.
"This just gets better and better," Duke said, smiling through yellowed, peg-like teeth.
"I don't think you have the guts," said Raynor.
"You so much as blank, boy, and my man will fill you with so much metal you can run a scrap drive. Now drop your weapon by three. One, two."
There was a high-pitched whine, and Duke's left shoulder exploded in a shower of molten metal. Duke's Marines all jumped and brought their weapons around, but did not fire. They had been ordered to wait for the command. The general slowly dropped to his knees, his own weapon clattering to the ground. His armor hissed as locking rings isolated the wounded shoulder, and med packs pumped narcotics into the general's bloodstream. Smoke curled from the barrel of the needle gun. Mike thumbed the hammer of the weapon back, and another round clicked into place.
"I think it's time you just shut up," Mike said to the general.
"I can have you burn where you stand," said Duke.
The meds in the armor were already taking effect, and his voice was slurred. Mike took two steps forward and said,
"Go ahead. You go first. Give the order, General."
Duke hesitated, his eyes unfocusing for a moment as the drugs hit his system hard. He was striving to stay awake on sheer cussedness.
"You don't have the guts," he managed.
"Try me," said Mike. "I've finally learned to shoot a human target."
There was silence in the landing bay for a moment. Then Raynor said,
"Man, pick up your weapons. We're moving out."
Raynor's men picked up their guns and threaded their way through the rebel Marines. Without Duke's specific orders, they would not fire on possibly friendly targets. Raynor paused by Mike and the kneeling Duke.
"Go ahead," said Mike. "I'll catch up."
Duke's face was ashen, and his eyes were milky and pupilless. No rational thought was left, only hatred and cowardice warring in his mind. He hissed,
"If I ever see you again, I'll kill you."
"Then get a good look at my back," said Mike, "because that's the only way you'll get a shot off in time."
Then the drugs took full control, and Duke pitched backward. Mike turned to the zombie-faced Marines.
"Get him to sickbay pronto and clear the bay for liftoff."
The Marines managed to grunt and left, taking their fallen leader with them. Mike ran for the dropship. The engines were already starting to whine as he charged up the gangplank. Raynor had been right about the dropship pilots. The pilot had the coordinates punched in and clearances made before Mike had gotten on board. Now the atmosphere was evacuated, and the dropship pitched out of the Hyperion and into the chaos beyond. Space was being ripped apart all around them. The Hyperion was flying through a debris field, pieces still burning as the air bled out of a pierced hull, the remains of some other human ship that had fallen in the path of the Protoss. Energy beams sliced through the vacuum, blistering the retinas of observers. Mike slid into the nav/com console behind the pilot's rig.
"I'm going to try to raise Kerrigan's unit," Mike said.
"She's not going to like it," Raynor said grimly, then added, "Do it anyway."
The huge carriers of the Protoss slid like great beasts through space, their attendant flocks of fighters dancing around them like golden flies. Crescent-shaped ships corkscrewed toward the planet, and needle-like fighters and scouts made of silver and gemstones lanced through the debris field. Behind them, the Hyperion itself was burning in a half-dozen spots. Nothing major, but at the moment, Mengsk would be worried about more than just a group of AWOL former supporters. The battlecruiser's Yamato cannon split the sky with repeated shots, breaking up units of Protoss fighters.
"We got more company," said the dropship pilot. "Strap in and hold tight."
Now the Zerg were rising from Tarsonis. The great flying cannons, orange with purplish wings, came aloft and splattered in the hundreds against the Protoss carriers. They were followed by the larger flying crab things, which seemed less affected by the small fighters than the Mutalisks were. As Mike watched, one of the crab things flew into the intake of the carrier, and the entire Protoss ship went up in a ball of blue-white flame. A pair of the winged Mutalisks noticed the dropship and banked toward them, their gullets vomiting forth coiling globules of bilious matter. The rebels had precious little in the way of defense on the dropships, and the pilot cursed and tried to bank away from the intercept course. They weren't going to make it, Mike realized, and braced for the impact with the Zerg acid spittle. A trio of bolts ripped the attacking Mutalisks into organic tatters, shredding their wings with laser fire. A trio of A-17 wraiths swooped through the remains of the Zerg, and Mike caught a glimpse of Confederate insignia on the pylons of the ships. Then they were gone as well, looking for new allies and new targets. "Any luck?" Raynor asked, leaning over Mike's shoulder. "Lots of traffic right now," Mike snapped. "Hold on. Got a lock. She's broadcasting. I'm putting it on the screen."
"This is Kerrigan."
Her face on the screen was now drawn and haggard. "Frightened," Mike thought, and a cold chill ran through him.
"We've neutralized the Protoss ground units, but there's a wave of Zerg advancing on this position. We need immediate evac."
Another screen winked into existence, and Menx's face fluttered into view. Something was sparking erratically near that face, causing him to appear and disappear like a Cheshire cat.
"Belay that order," the rebel leader spat. "We're moving out."
Raynor punched the microphone button.
"What? You're not just going to leave them?"
If Menx could heard Raynor's comment, he gave no outward sign. Given the interference, it was likely he hadn't heard. Instead, he said,
"All ships prepare to move away from Tarsonis on my mark."
A burst of static broke up Kerrigan's signal. Something big had hit near her. Then she was back.
Boys? How about that evac?
"Damn you, Arcturus!"
Raynor said through gritted teeth. "Don't do this!" Menx continued to fade in and out. Finally, he came in, crisp and clear.
"Signal the fleet and take us out of orbit. Now!"
"Arcturus," said Kerrigan, in comparison to Menx, now nothing more than a ghost on the screen.
"Jim? Mike? What the hell's going on up there?"
Then the fog of war swallowed her entirely, and the screens registered nothing but static. Raynor pounded the nav/com console in frustration.
"You break it, you bought it,"
said the pilot, throwing the dropship into a tight spiral to break off pursuit by a pair of crab things. With steel nerves, the pilot dropped the fleeing shuttle beneath a Protoss scout, and the crab thing set up to attack it instead. Mike tracked the location of Kerrigan's broadcast and fed the coordinates into the helm. The ship rocked and swayed onto its new course. Around them, 100 new stars were born and died in a matter of instants. The greatest danger was now debris from the stricken ships, and the pilot cursed a couple times as he had to lurch suddenly to avoid catching a large piece in the hull. Finally, they were in the atmosphere itself. The screens tinged orange from the re-entry fires. Most of the battle was now above them. They only had to worry about surface units now. But as above, so below. They were coming in low across the rubble-strewn surface of the planet itself. The great cities of Tarsonis were burning. The broad plazas filled with debris, and the sunward spires now nothing more than a set of jagged, erratic teeth. The glass of the great buildings had been completely shattered, leaving only the twisted wreckage of the steel skeletons beneath. One great swath had been leveled through three blocks, ending in the crippled wreckage of a Protoss carrier, venting unearthly radiation from every broken seam. The buildings decreased in size as the rebels flew toward the farmlands and suburbs, but the devastation was still severe. Mike could see craters where ships had augured into the surface.
There were sweeping fires here as well, consuming homes and fields, and moving among them, there were warriors from all sides. Now there were new buildings, as well as along the scorched landscapes, those of the alien invaders. The creep was everywhere, and deadly poppy-headed structures uncoiled toward the sky. Nests surrounded with pulsing eggs dotted the landscape. There were other structures, too, among the debris. These were golden, with impossible buttresses and sweeping shells and mirrored surfaces of unshatterable glass. The Protoss were setting up their defenses on Tarsonis. Perhaps they thought there was something here worth saving, Mike thought. That means they had more faith in humanity than Menx did. The ground beneath them roiled with the Zerg, and among them, like shining knights, the Protoss warriors strode, leaving a wake of dead, oozing bodies. Four-legged mechanical spiders crawled through the ruins, and huge things that looked like armor-plated caterpillars assaulted the Zerg hives. Lance-thin fighters strafed the hulking scythe Zergs that swept the Protoss warriors aside like a farmer threshing wheat. Mike said, "We should be close now." The radio scratched and spat, and a male voice, young and frightened, came on.
"Looking for an evac. We got civilians and wounded. We can see your craft. You got room on that tub?"
Raynor was on the radio.
"Lieutenant Kerrigan, are you there?"
"No Kerrigan, sir," came the crackling response. "But we're really hurting. The Zerg are everywhere, and coming in with another assault. If we don't leave now, we're not leaving."
There was a tremor of fear in the voice. Mike looked at Raynor. The large man's face was unreadable, a clay sculpture of the real thing. Finally, he said,
"We're going down. Tell them we're coming."
Mike nodded and said, "But Kerrigan—"
"I know," said Raynor,
and over the background hiss of the comm unit, Mike could swear he heard the sound of a heart breaking. The former lawman took a deep breath and added,
"Menx would abandon these people like the rest. We won't. I hope that's why we're better than he is."
The dropship grounded itself at the edge of a school-turned bunker, and refugees had begun streaming out even as the pilot hit the retros. They were led by a lanky kid who wore the tatters of a combat suit, some volunteer from a fringe world from Menx's rebellion. Mike had never seen him before. The kid saluted Raynor and said,
"Damn glad to see you. I heard the bug-out order, but no one came for us. There are Zerg all along the northern flank. Some Protoss hit them a while back, bought us a breathing spell, but I think the bugs are coming back. The creep's halfway here already, and there's nothing we can do about it."
Raynor just said, "What unit is this?"
The youngster blinked.
"We're not any unit at all, sir. There are about a half dozen units, or what's left of them, that hold up here. Confederate and rebel both, sir. When the Zerg started swarming and the Protoss started blasting, it was every human for himself."
"Have you heard anything about a Lieutenant Kerrigan?" Raynor snapped. "She was engaged in fighting the Protoss near this location."
"No, sir," said the kid. "One of the stragglers said there was a unit fighting Protoss up on the ridge."
He waved in the direction of the Zerg.
"If and that's true, Zerg got him, I'm afraid."
Raynor took a deep breath and said,
"Get your people on the dropship. Don't worry about heavy ordnance, leave it. It's not like the Zerg or the Protoss can use it. We lift in 2 minutes.
Mike came up alongside Raynor and said, "We can still search for her." Raynor shook his head.
"You heard the kid. There's more Zerg coming. With Menx's rebels pulling back, the entire planet's going to be awash in aliens in no time at all. The dropship has no defense, and we've got non-combatants on board. We've got to get out now and hope we can bum a lift out of the system before everything goes up."
Mike put a hand on Raynor's shoulder.
"I'm sorry."
"I know," said Raynor. "God help me, I know."
Chapter 17. Roads Not Taken. The Confederacy died with Tarsonis. So much of the power and prestige had been locked up there for so long that with its collapse, the rest of the Confederacy went with it. Arcturus Menx played coroner, of course, performing the autopsy and declaring that the patient had died of massive Zerg poisoning, compounded by Protoss trauma. The irony that Menx's fingerprints were all over the Confederacy's murder weapon mattered little to many and was ignored by most. As you might expect, it was not something UNN covered in those days. Before the last Confederate trooper was digested in a Zerg hive, Menx declared the Terran Dominion in order to unite the surviving planets, a shining new phoenix that would rise from the ashes and gather together all of humanity. Only by standing together, the former rebel declared, could we come to defeat the alien menaces. The first ruler of this bright, shining new government was Emperor Arcturus Menx I, ascending to the throne by popular acclamation. The irony of this last little fact, that most of the acclamation was Menx's own, was also missed by most of the general populace. The Liberty Manifesto. Even as time ticked away, they circled for another 20 minutes, looking for stragglers on the ground. All they found was a lot of Zerg and a lot of land already swallowed by the creep. Finally, listening to the repeated protests of the dropship pilot, they lifted off. Beneath them, the ground churned with Zerg building new structures of Gothic flesh. There were flashes of Protoss weapons crackling over the horizon like heat lightning in the summer. Manx contacted the dropship on the way up, a general call to all ships within the area. The terrorist's face was calm, but it was a stone-faced calm, one that didn't project across the screen. His eyes were bright and avaricious.
"Gentlemen, you've done very well, but remember that we've still got a job to do. The seeds of a new empire have been sown, and if we hope to reap..."
Raynor leaned forward toward the comm-mounted camera and toggled a switch.
"Aw, to hell with you," he snarled.
Menx heard that one. The great brow lowered between the rebel leader's eyes.
"Jim, I can forgive your impulsive nature, but you're making a terrible mistake. Don't cross me, boy. Don't ever think to cross me. I've sacrificed too much to let this fall apart."
"You mean like you sacrificed Kerrigan?" Raynor snapped.
Menx recoiled, as if Raynor had reached out through space and slugged him. His face reddened.
"You'll regret that. You don't seem to realize my situation here. I will not be stopped."
Raynor had finally broken through the thick, deep patina that covered the leader of the rebellion and found the man beneath. Menx was angry now, and veins were standing out at the base of his neck.
"I will not be stopped," he repeated. "Not by you, or the Confederates, or the Protoss, or anyone. I will rule this sector, or see it burn to ashes around me, if any of you try to get in my—"
Raynor hit the kill switch for the sound, and watched Menx spit and bellow silently on the screen.
"You got under his skin," said Mike. "At last." "Must have been something I said," Raynor said, but he didn't smile when he said it.
In the humming silence of the dropship, Mike said, "I'm sorry about Sarah." It didn't sound any better now than it had before on the surface. Raynor sat down next to Mike and looked at the deck for a while.
"Yeah, me too," he said at last. "I shouldn't have let her go alone."
"I know what you're going through."
"What, you a telepath now?"
Mike shrugged. "I'm a human. That's what's important. It's been a long war. We've all had losses. We've all seen things we don't want to have seen. A smart man once told me that the living feel guilty about still being alive. And no, it's not your fault."
"Sure feels like it," said Raynor.
There was a silence in the dropship cabin. Finally, the ex-lawman shook his head.
"It's not over," he said. "The Protoss and the Zerg aren't going to give a rat's ass that Menx is running things now.
They don't care about human wars or human leaders. They're battling throughout human space. It's not over.
I think it's over for me, said Mike. I'm not a warrior. I've played at it, but I'm a newsman. I don't belong on the battlefield. I belong behind a keyboard or in front of a holo camera. The universe has changed, son.
What are you planning on doing?
It was Mike's turn to take a long pause.
I don't know, he said at last.
Something to help out, I suppose.
Can't help myself there, but it has to be something other than this.
The dropship had limited range, but they managed to flag down a lift out-system on the Thunderchild, an old Leviathan-class cruiser that only 4 hours and one mutiny earlier had been in the service of the Confederacy. Now it and most of the human ships were pulling back out of combat, leaving Tarsonis to the Zerg, the Protoss, and whatever poor fools who thought underground bunkers were a good idea. The comm officer of the Child met them at the gangway.
"I have a message for you from Arcturus Minsk."
"Minsk," spat Raynor. "Is he looking for me to rip him a new orifice?"
"It's not for you, sir," said the comm officer. "It's for Mr. Michael Liberty, emphasis on the mister. You can take it in the communications room if you want."
Raynor raised a tired eyebrow. Mike waved him to come along. The former planetary marshal, former rebel captain, former revolutionary, settled himself in a chair out of view of the comm console's camera. Mike toggled the reply switch and waited for the message to come through space from the Hyperion. Arcturus Mengsk warped into view on the screen. Every hair was back in place, and every action mannered and rehearsed. It was as if the earlier incident had not happened.
"Michael," he beamed.
"Arcturus," said Mike, not even giving him a smile. Mengsk looked down briefly in sorrow, as if thinking carefully about his next words. Once it would have worked, but now it was a shallow, emotionless mannerism, one that the rebel leader clearly had rehearsed. Michael almost expected him to come around and sit on the edge of the desk.
"I'm afraid I can't express sufficiently my regrets about Sarah. I just don't know what to say."
"Captain Raynor had a few choice words," said Mike, his own eyes now blazing.
"And someday I hope that Jim and I can talk about it."
Menx's smile was forced and strained. Something had happened, and the great bubble around Mengsk had been shattered.
"But that's not why I called you. I have someone who wants to talk to you."
Mengsk reached off-screen to flip a switch, and a new face replaced that of the future emperor of the human universe, a balding head dominated by a pair of bushy eyebrows.
"Handy," said Mike.
"Mickey,"
said Handy Anderson.
"It's good to see you, buddy. I knew that if anyone in the stable survived this mess, it would be you. You're the lucky coin, always turning up when needed."
"Anderson, where are you?"
"Here on the Hyperion, of course. Arcturus had me shuttled over from a refugee ship. He's been telling me how great you've been through all this. A real trooper. Why no reports for a while?"
"I sent reports. You changed them, remember? Said Mengsk had captured me? Ring any bells?"
"A small bit of editing," said Anderson. "Just enough to make the powers that be, God rest their eternal souls, content. I knew you'd understand."
"Handy?"
"Anyway, I hear you've done a bang-up job, and I knew you'd want to know that, despite the present situation, you can have your old job back."
"My old?"
"Sure. I mean, the people who wanted you dead are now no longer in the business, one way or another. I was talking with Arcturus here, and we could make you the official press liaison to his government. He thinks the world of you, you know. Apparently, you grew on him with your winning personality."
"Anderson, I don't know if—" Mike said, tapping his forehead with the palm of his hand.
"Just listen. Here's the deal, said the editor-in-chief. You get your own office just down the hall from Arcturus's. All access all the time. You do the trips, cover the dinners, get the awards, lots of perks, lots of security. It's a cush job. Hell, I can get a stringer to type up your reports for you, I tell you.
Mike thumbed the sound off. Anderson kept talking, but Mike was no longer looking at him. He was looking at his own reflection in the smooth surface of the screen. He was leaner than when he had last been in Anderson's presence, and his hair was more rumpled, but there was something else as well. It was in his eyes. His eyes seemed to be looking beyond the console, beyond the walls of the ship itself. It was a distant look, a hard look, a look that he once thought of as being one of despair, but now realized was determination. He was seeing a bigger picture than the one he was immediately involved with, a look he had seen before on Jim Raynor's face when Marsara died. How long will he go before he notices you're not listening? Raynor grunted. He's never noticed before, Mike said. He sucked on his lower lip for a moment, then said, I know what I want to do. I should start using my own hammer. Raynor sighed. Try that once more in English. When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, quoted Mike. I'm not a warrior. I'm a newsman. And I should start using my newsman tools for the good of humanity. Get the story out. Get the real story out. Mike hooked a thumb toward the screen. Handy Anderson had finally noticed that he wasn't being heard. The balding editor-in-chief tapped the screen and mouthed an unheard question. I want to get as far away from Arcturus Mengsk as possible, said Mike. And then I want to start telling the truth about all this, because if I don't, people like him are going to determine what really happened. He jerked a thumb at the screen. Him and Arcturus Mengsk. And I don't think humanity could survive those lies. Raynor smiled, and it was a broad, earnest smile. It's good to have you back, he said. It's good to be back, said Mike, looking at the far-eyed stranger reflected in the monitor. He shook his head and added, I could really use a cigarette. So could I, said Raynor. I don't think there are any on this tub. But look at the bright side. At least you still got your coat. Postbellum. Bathed in light, the man in the tattered coat stands in a room of shadows. The smoke from the last of a series of cigarettes snakes around him, and the ground at his luminous feet is scattered with butts that look like fallen stars. So what you're seeing, says Michael Liberty, the luminous figure speaking to the surrounding darkness, is my own private little war, fought on my turf, and with my weapons. Not cruisers and space fighters and marines, but just words, and the truth. That's my specialty. That's my hammer, and I know how to use it. The figure takes another long puff, and the final coffin nail joins the others on the floor. And you people, whoever you are, need to hear it. True and unfiltered. That's why the hollow transmissions, they're harder to fake. And I'm spreading this as far as I can, over the open wavelengths, so everyone knows about Mengsk and the Zerg and the Protoss, and knows about men and women like Jim Raynor and Sarah Kerrigan, so they, and others like them, may not be forgotten. Michael Liberty scratches the back of his neck and says, I went into the military thinking it was just another bureaucracy filled with craven cowards and corporate stupidity. Well, I was right, but I was also wrong. He looks at the viewers with unseeing eyes. But there are also people really trying to help others. People really trying to save others, save their bodies, save their minds, save their souls. His brow furrows and he adds,
And we need more people like that, if we're going to survive the dark days ahead. He shrugs again. That's it. That's the story of the fall of the Confederacy, of the Zerg and the Protoss invasions, of the rise of Emperor Mengsk of the Terran Dominion. The battles are still being fought, planets are still dying, and most of the time, no one seems to know why. When I find that out, I'll get you that information as well. I'm Michael Daniel Liberty, no longer of UNN. Now, I'm a free man, and I'm done. And with those words, the figure freezes in place, trapped in its prison of light. He is caught with a tired smile on his face, a satisfied smile. Around the hologram, the lights come up, luminous bulbs that have been bred specifically for the purpose. The walls pulse and sweat, and thick, viscous fluid drips from weeping sores along that wall to keep the air moist and warm. The cable of the human-constructed hologram projector merges in a gooey lump into the organic power constructs of the main structure. The connection between the two worlds was once a colonial marine, but now serves a higher purpose for its new masters. On semi-organic screens around the perimeter, the better brains of the Zerg discuss what they have seen. They are morphic constructs, bred only to think and direct. They, too, serve their higher purpose within the Zerg hive. In the projection room, a hand reaches up and touches the rewind button. The hand was once human, but is now transformed, the product of the Zerg's mutagenic capabilities. The flesh of the hand is green and dotted with chitin-like extrusions. Beneath the surface of the skin, strange ichors and new organs twist and slide. Once she was human, but she has been transformed, and now serves a higher purpose. She was once called Sarah, but now is known as the Queen of Blades. The other organic minds, leaders of the Zerg, make noise in the background. Kerrigan ignores them, for they say nothing, at least nothing that matters. Instead, she leans forward to study the weathered face in the hollow, the face with the deep, transfixing eyes. Deep within her restructured heart, something stirs. A ghost of a memory of a feeling for this man, and for other men. For those who would sacrifice all for their humanity, as opposed to merely sacrificing their humanity itself. Kerrigan shudders for a moment as the old feeling washes over her, that now alien feeling of her once human nature. Yet, as quickly as it appears, the emotion is suppressed, so that none of the other Zerg notice it. At least, that's what Kerrigan assumes. Kerrigan nods. She blames the reporter's words for the uncomfortable emotion. It has to be the report itself, not the memories it brings, that disturbs her. Michael Liberty always was a master of words. He could make even a queen long for her days as a simple pawn. Still, there is much in Michael Liberty's broadcast, and much that is not realized by the non-human minds that are now her compatriots. There is much valuable data here. Much that can be divined from Michael Liberty's words, what he says, and how he says it. The projector chimes, signaling the rewind complete, and the inhuman hand presses the play button, then raises a finger to her very wide lips. Kerrigan, the Queen of Blades, permits herself a small smile and concentrates on the man wrapped in light. She wants to see what else she can learn from her new enemies. This is Neil Kaplan. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Liberty's Crusade by Jeff Grubb. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services, executive producer Byron Parnell,
Text copyright 2017 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. Production copyright 2018 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.